From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made decades ago in Puerto Rico with an 8-year-old boy. Mother's Day was coming up, and the boy wanted to get his mom a gift. He and his family were living in poverty, and he didn't really have anything to give her or any money to buy her a present. But this little boy, Johnny Vega, did have a plan. As he told WROC, Vega walked an hour and a half to San Juan, where he begged the organizers of a singing contest at a radio station to allow him to enter. The contest had already ended, but Vega convinced the station to give him a chance. He performed a romantic song called Vanidad, and he won. He and the initial winner agreed to split the prize, and Vega went home with a basket of perfumed soaps and toiletries for his mother. What a guy. That radio station singing contest was the first time he performed in public. It was the beginning of the international recording artist and salsa music pioneer's long and illustrious career. You might have briefly heard Johnny Vega recently on Connections as part of our conversation with the newest inductees of the Rochester Music Hall of Fame. He's often referred to as the salsa maestro, and the team at the hall says there is salsa before Johnny Vega and salsa after Johnny Vega. And that, they say, refers primarily to his implementation of horns, trumpets, vocal harmonies, just like these. Como me pide la salsa, la toco. Yo te la toco como me la pides. Como me pide la salsa, la toco. Yo te la toco como me la pides. That's Johnny Vega, Como Me La Pida. It will officially be released today, but it's already being played on radio stations, and Vega and his 12-piece band will perform it at the Rochester Music Hall of Fame induction ceremony next month. There was a lot more we wanted to talk about when Johnny was last on the show, and so we said, we need a Johnny Vega hour. This is something that Rochesterians, it's always interesting when there is someone in your community who, you may know him, you may have heard of it, kind of, and yet you go around the world and this person's big, and that's Johnny Vega. And it is so great to have you in studio. Thank you. Thank you for being here, sir.
Thank you.
Gracias.
I feel so great inside. I run out of words of all beautiful
things. You're already out of words? We're here for like 50 more minutes, man.
God's giving me at this age, you know what I'm saying? I love it. And this is something that I would never expect it. Never in my life.
Well,
I thank you, and I thank the people. I thank the people in Rochester, and anything that I do is representing the city of Rochester, because they welcomed me in 1970 with open arms. Till this day, I can't thank them enough.
Well, it turns out you're not out of words. It's a good thing. It is great to have you, Johnny. Thank you for being here. Let me also welcome Hector Argonzoni, who is a member of Vega's band and a leader in the Rochester Puerto Rican community. Great to have you. Thank you for being here,
great
Hector.
Great to be here. It's a great opportunity. This man is to me, my idol, and I really am so excited. He most of the time is overwhelmed because he's not used to all this attention, but he's a very humble man and a tremendous talent and a great asset to our community.
This is going to be a celebration this hour and a story that I think the community should know. And I want to thank Dresden Engel for being willing to kind of come into the studio at the last second, because I saw Dres here, and Dresden has been doing such great work for the Rochester Music Hall of Fame, getting ready for their big show, was on this program recently. I didn't even know you were going to be here, but I thought, since we're going to talk about the show, I'm going to make you sit in on this. So thank
right.
you.
Thank you. Thank
Thanks
you.
For willing to hang
My
here.
Honor to sit across from these three handsome and talented gentlemen.
Well, and you want to remind people right away here, because when we get into it with Johnny, a big reason we got to know him recently is he's going to be in the Music Hall of Fame here.
That's right. Rochester Music Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Our actual formal name, thanks to our sponsor this year, Whirlwind, Rochester Music Hall of Fame ceremony and concert. So, new name this year. We are ecstatic to be inducting Johnny Vega. We've wanted to induct Johnny for a very long time, and this was the year. It's our 11th year. There have been 61 inductees to date. And so when people think Rochester Dill doesn't have an immense amount of talent to induct, you suddenly meet Johnny Vega and say, wow, there were still that many riches in Rochester? And oh, yes, there are. And here's a beautiful example.
All right, tickets available where, Drez?
Eastman Theater box office, and the website rochestermusic.org will give you all the details you need on our 7 inductees this year.
We've got some music to play this hour. They're going to have big music that night. You already heard just a clip of it here. Hector, when did you first meet Johnny Vega?
Oh, back in the 70s. Johnny Vega was with La Muralla, which he was one of the original members. Actually, he gave La Muralla that name. He was one responsible. I was with Antonetti, with the Antonetti Orchestra, singing. And we knew each other as musicians and just someone that I idolized because I knew his history. I knew of his history with Cortijo y su Combo in Puerto Rico, which is one of the largest, well-known band from Puerto Rico. And he was singing at a very young age with Cortijo, which is impressive by itself. But then everything else that came along was just more frosting on the cake.
Well, Johnny, I love the story that you told ROC, and I want to ask you a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. Because when I meet great musicians or great singers, it's always interesting to me to find out if there was a moment where you figured that you could do this and or if you fell in love with it. And I don't know if it was that Mother's Day, that singing contest, mm-hmm. or if you even before then. Do you remember the first time that you really felt like you could be a singer?
Well, I would, not only a singer, I want to tell you something that's funny. I come from the poorest barrios in Puerto Rico. I mean, we're very poor. I mean, we didn't have water. When I was about 8 years old, before I went to school, I had to carry a can to a public, the line, maybe 15 people there to carry water to my house before I went to school. So we have water to drink. We have water to cook. We have water to do the dishes. I mean, everything. We didn't have a bathroom.
Yeah.
We were so poor that, and yet we ate good. You know, we never missed a meal, thanks to my mom. Mm. Those are the most beautiful years that I've spent in the island of Puerto Rico. My sister, Marie, and I were very close, so this is really funny. They used to have birthday parties right in the neighborhood, right? And nobody would move. And somebody would say, "Let's go get Johnny and Marie," and we start dancing, you know, and we lit up the party.
At what age were you, like teenagers or younger?
No, I must be 7 years old.
7 years old.
Yeah,
let's go get the life of the party.
Yeah, 7 years old.
So music was always part of your life. Huh?
Always. There was two things that I love in my life. Music and boxing. I love boxing. In our family, we have about 3 professional boxers. And that's another career that I said, if I don't do it in the music, I'm going to
You could have been a boxer?
Yeah.
If we both gloved up right now, could I lay one on you? Could I get one punch on you?
I got a fast hook. I got a fast hook.
Yeah. So the answer is no. I would not lay a glove.
No, I wouldn't do it either because I'm not that fast anymore. You know, I used to have a good
jab. But you're smart, Johnny.
I used to have
a
good
jab. You're wise.
You know, I fought in the finals in New York City when I was 14, and I was fighting 21-year-old man. And because I was tall, they never believed that I weighed 126 pounds. They never believed. And I fought for the championship. And the guy that fought with me, Emilio Stella Cruz, was the best novice. And I fought with him, and I knocked him down 3 times.
And I'm sure he heard the music.
And the fight, you know, I played, I was representing Sixto Escobar Sporting Club, which is one of the biggest boxing champions in Puerto Rico, you know, internationally. But the other kid belonged to the Police Athletic League. So they didn't give me the fight. And my uncle went over to the manager and says, how can he get the fight? He knocked him down three times in each round. The guy says, his trainer said, I'm not one of the judges. They gave it to my boy. I can't do nothing. I know you're. So they gave me my silver star. You know, I wanted the gold star. But it was okay.
We're just going to talk boxing this whole hour. I've changed my mind. I've changed my mind.
Because it was one of the, when I went with my mom with the papers so she can sign it to be pro, my mother said, when there's no money involved, it's a sport. Once there's money involved, you can lose your life. Mm. So I said, okay, bye.
So when you grew up in that, we're talking to Johnny Vega in this great conversation about one of the newest inductees to be in the Rochester Music Hall of Fame. Johnny, when you were growing up, you know, you had great food because of your mom. There was always music in your life. And food and music, as we know, is a big part of culture.
Oh, yeah.
So you might have grown up in poverty, but boy, you had culture. And you had all of these things that were embedded in your soul, I'm sure. But when you're in your teenage years, can you talk a little bit about the path that eventually brought you to Rochester and how you've figured that you would make a living, whether it was music or anything else?
I came to New York City at 13 years old, okay, from Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
okay? I had never touched a guitar, never. And then there was a guy upstairs in the apartment upstairs living, and he had a guitar, and we kept hearing playing guitar. So I don't know who gave me a guitar. I can't remember, but he gave me a guitar, and I started, and I went upstairs and said, can you teach me a little bit? And he started teaching me a couple of chords. A year after that, we made a trio, my uncle, another friend of ours, and myself. And we started playing all around. When the people from Puerto Rico used to come to New York City to work, if they come from one town, they would make like a social club, like everybody from Calle, everybody from Bayamón. So they had, and with the trio, we started making money.
Playing parties?
Yeah, yeah. Kids. I mean, I was, 15? I was 15 mm-hmm. years old.
Yeah.
And we were playing those gigs. And I remember that it got to a point where we needed to play dance music, you know? And there was a gentleman called San Germán who used to have a show called New Faces, Caras Nuevas. And we auditioned for him, and he said, and I was 14 years old at the time. And he says, you're going to be part of our show at the Jefferson Theater on 14th Street. It's a new addition to the show. And we went and we played. And we played there. They gave us a contract like for, I don't know, 2 months. And that was just the first time that I really, really, after Vanidad, that was the first time that we did something in front of an audience.
And being in front of an audience is a little bit addicting, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how it was for you.
You know, you want to hear something funny? This guy came to play, and we were supposed to back him out. And the guy was so bad that they started throwing, like, wooden planks or something, you know, to him. And one of them hit me in my face, and I kept backing on until I hid myself behind the curtain. And then they took the guy out, and we played one of our songs, and we got a big hand. Everybody started, you know, applauding.
What was that like?
Have you seen a kid with a new toy? That was me.
That was you.
Oh yes.
Yeah. And so that was in New York City. Still.
New York City, yeah.
Okay. And so take us through the timeline then to Rochester.
Okay. I was 14 and I was there. We started playing, not salsa, and at that time it was guarachas, you know, and merengues. Which are different rhythms. You know, it's a little more, different than salsa. Okay, salsa is it's in its own world. But and we needed to add a trumpet to the trio, and we needed to add a timbala player to the trio because the audience was a little older. You know what I'm saying? And we started playing guarachas and playing dip, you know, fat music, dancing music. And he hit me. You know what I mean? He says, why didn't we play this before? Because if you see the fun that people were having, and that group we called, the first group that we have, the trio was Las Tres Voces, the three voices, okay? This one, then we changed the name to the Young Rhythms, Jóvenes del Ritmo. That's when we started making money. And
were you writing your own stuff, or I mean, what were you playing?
Oh no, I was just singing. Oh, guitar.
I mean, in terms of the music, was it original music, or were you kind
no,
of?
No, covers.
Covers.
Yeah. I wasn't writing music then.
Yep, got it.
You know, songs. So we started playing and making good money. And one day, this gentleman had, and we were playing together with a good band, Los Lebron Brothers, mm-hmm. at a church party. The Lebron Brothers, a big orchestra. And we played.
Big salsa band.
Yeah. And we say, and I hear the salsa, you know, and I hear the rhythm they have. So I think from there, somebody heard me singing, and they said, tell Johnny to be here Friday. Can you bring him? And a friend of mine says, yeah. You know who wants to see you? I say, who? Gil Suarez. Yeah, Gil Suarez. Who's Gil Suarez? He's got a band called the High Latins, and he's recording. And I said, okay. So I went there, and he gave me to sing a salsa song. You know, that's a salsa song. He's in between American music, English music, and salsa at the time. That's why he called them High Latins. You know, and I sang, and he says, Johnny, you want to stay with the band? And I said, well, what was I, 17 years old? I said, hey, I live with my mom and my gym. How late am I going to be supposed to be playing? And he said, well, we're going to play in clubs. I said, I got to have permission. I can't just take a gig like this. So I think I did two gigs with him, and then I thought it was too much for me. And I said, no. So then I quit, you know. Then one day I was at a place, and this guy, I think it was Mikey Hernandez, his name, he had a big band called Sonora Casino. And he asked me to go to in stage with the people, with the singer, the rest of the machine. I started singing. And he also said, why don't you hang around with us? You know, we got another gig. And the first thing I said, you know, what time, how late you play? He said, no, I can't do that. I can't. I gotta get home, you know. So from there, going back when I was about 9 years old, around Cortijo was one of the biggest bands in Puerto Rico. I mean, number one band in Puerto Rico, was rehearsing close because the leader, Rafael Cortijo, was from my neighborhood. And they were rehearsing, and I heard that. With one of the biggest salsa singer, Imael Rivera. They were kids. They were young. And I was a little boy. And I said to myself, one of these days, I'd love to sing with that group. I just heard it from far. I wasn't in front of them, but I heard their music and I heard their name. So I kept with my music. I went after I was, you know, with Mike Casino and Gil Suarez. That's when we started doing again, Jóvenes del Ritmo, you know? And then I was older, so I could stay out a little later. And we came, you know, I started working. I started working at an early age because it was seven of us with my mom. See, my mom and my dad divorced when I was about six, something like that. And I grew up, you know, my mom was my guide, you know. I started working so my younger brothers could study, could go to school.
So you're helping support.
Yeah, that's why when I was they wanted to draft me into the service, they classified me 1A. And when I went in there and they knew that I was working and supporting my...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They take 3A, so I never went to the service. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember that my mom, you know, she's used to sew, you know, sewing machine, and she's always there. So my other sister, and myself went to work, so the other kids go to school. Well, one of my brothers, he passed away. He was the New York State bilingual teacher. He became a teacher. Mm-hmm. He was a teacher for 35 years in Brooklyn. And then my older sister became a teacher here in Rochester.
So what's the Rochester connection? Tell us that story.
One day, that's when I met Rafael Cortijo.
Yeah, I was going to say he actually started singing in New York with Rafael Cortijo and was doing international travel before he came to Rochester. Mm-hmm. And the story goes that, well, I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah.
That he was invited to participate in a tour that they were doing in Panama.
Mm-hmm. And my wife was expecting, and I had two girls at the time. I was 25 years old, mm-hmm. about 25 years old. And they told me, says, we got to go to Panama. I said, my wife is, you know, is expecting. So they said, I got to talk to the doctor before I do this gig. So I talked to the doctor, and the doctor says, Johnny, she's not going to have the baby until about at least February 18th. And I was leaving on the 1st, and I was coming back on the 14th. And like I said, those days you couldn't communicate from Panama like we do now with a phone,
no
or WhatsApp,
right.
or anything.
Absolutely.
With second, I couldn't even make a call. So what I did the gig. We went there. I went to play. We played the carnivals. I'd never been out of New York. This was new to me. One of the funny things that happened to me before it got sad was that I was sitting at a restaurant and I'm eating, right, in Panama, and the whole bunch of kids come with carnival, all dressed up and painted, and they started dancing around my table, and I'm looking at them and I'm laughing. And all of a sudden, you know, I didn't do anything, and one of them stained my shirt.
He what?
He
stained.
Put a stain.
Oh, stained your shirt.
Yeah,
because they were dressed up.
Yeah, he was like that and went like that. And I said, man, I asked my friend, said, if you don't put money on the table or you don't give a cover, that's what they do. So, well, why didn't you tell me before this happened? Yeah, I didn't know anything. It's the first time. I've never been out of New York. So I gave him a couple of dollars, you know. But some things that happened to me in Panama. Another thing that happened to me in Panama was that I got hungry about 10:30 one time at the hotel. They had a driver that used to drive us around. And I said, man, am I hungry? The guy said, okay, come on. I got a friend of mine. He got arrested. So I get into the car and he drive me. We go in Panama. They don't have like police. They got soldiers. Okay? With the machine goes in every corner. So we're going to make a turn, and the gentleman went like this to us. I say, he's telling you to stop. He said, yeah. No, he's one of the singers there. He's hungry. And I know the owner. He says, no, it's closed. He said, no, it's okay, because see. And he went like this. I said, it's closed. So I told the guy, let's make a U-turn and go back to the hotel. So when you go to
it's
a different
country.
It's
amazing what a machine gun will convince you to
do. Oh, man. So, you know, when you go to these countries, not now. Now I know what goes on, but we were there 14. When I got home, my wife was in the hospital, and she had the baby. It was my first boy. My two little girls, Naomi and Ronnie, were with my mom, you know. And I said, where's my wife? And the oldest, Naomi, Mimi, call her Mimi, says, Dad, she had the baby. I said, what do you mean she had the baby? She said, yes, she had another girl. She was pulling my leg. I didn't know.
Oh, boy.
She had another girl. I already had two girls. So I said, let me go. Right away, I took a cab because you don't drive in New York. You don't drive in New York. You don't have a license in New York, driving license. So I go, and I took a cab, and I went to the hospital. And when I walked in there, and I saw in the room, and I walked towards her, and she started looking, and she had tears in her eyes. And I said, from far, I said, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. And I walked in there, and she said, did you hear what I had? I said, yeah, Mimi told me you had another girl. I said, no, I had a boy. And then I really broke down. And I said, I am so sorry. I will never travel again, Mama. Never, ever, ever. The next day, I called my sister, Cremilda Rosario. She was teaching here, going to school to be a teacher. And I said, Mama, can I go over there and stay a couple of days, get a job and an apartment so I could bring my family here? I want to get away. I got to get out of New York City. And she said, yeah. They call me Junior, and my brothers. Yeah, you can come. And I came, got me a job. At the time, I had a good job in New York City. I was the manager of, Tom McCann today? It wasn't Tom McCann, it was called Miles Shoes, and I was the manager of a big store. And I was making a lot of money, you know, for my family. Mm-hmm. But I said goodbye to everything. I had an album with two tunes that I had recorded already with Ansonia Records. And, you know, Cortijo, I had already an album with him before, full and complete. But the second one I already, and I didn't say anything. Someday Cortijo calls my mom, where's Johnny? She says, Johnny moved. What means he moved? We got a recording. I said, I don't. They said, Mom, don't tell anybody where I am. So I came to Rochester, you know, it's a funny thing. I got a job, an application at Kodak Park, and I went in there. They say, yeah, we'll give you a job, blah, blah, blah. So they started me out with $2.50 an hour. And I said to myself, how do these people live here? Because in New York, you make good money. You know, New York, you made real good money those days. And that's another funny thing. He said, the guys, you got to be here tomorrow. You got boots. I said, yup. So the next day I go to work. I punch my car, go inside, and the guy look at me and says, I ask if you have boots. I said, yeah, look. So I pull up my pants, and they were dress boots.
Not work boots.
Kiss game boots. He said to me, how much are those? How much are those boots? I said, why? He said, how much are they? At the time, the boots were like $75. Yeah. But I had a good job. I mean, I had nice suits. I got, I had it. And he said, I mean work boots, you know, steel toes. So why didn't I know about, I never worked at a place that I needed steel toes. So anyway, I stayed there for about 3 years and I couldn't take it anymore, Dakota. Because they put me to work at night, you know, the C shift, and in the dark room as an inspector. I told my wife, I got to get out of here. I'm not. So then at that time, they had another place called Stromberg Carson on Humboldt Street that they made parts for the telephone. And I got me a job there. And since I learned a little bit in the machines with Kodak, they put me in a manual punch press. So I started working on my punch press, and I started setting up my and they says, Johnny, I'm going to make you a setup, man. You think you can set up all the machines? I said, yeah. So then they gave me 10 machines. I had to be there earlier so I could do 10 dies. And I started making good money then. Yeah, and then they moved to Florida. And they say, you want to go? Nope. I ain't got nobody in Florida. I got my family here. But then that's when I got here in 1970. I promised my wife that I was never going to travel again. So what happens? 1971, after we made Muralla, Muralla came in 1973, but well, I used to have fun with Mike Rosario, may he rest in peace. And I said, I miss New York City. And Mike said, why don't we go to New York City? You want to go to New York City? I said, yeah. I got an old car, so I couldn't drive to New York City. I had a 1963 Galaxy 500. Beautiful car, but it was old. So he had a new van, so we go. We go to New York City to see one of the singers, Rafi Martinez, the original singer from Muralla. And we went to New York City, and all of a sudden, somebody says, Johnny, how you doing? He said, where are you? I said, well, I don't live here anymore. I'm not doing music anymore. He says, what do you mean? These guys looking for you. He said, who? Caco. Caco is a good band leader, big band leader. So we go to say hello. And he says to me, I've been looking for you. I said, why? He says, I got a tour. I got a trip tour. And you're the guy that's going to do it. I said, not me. I told my wife, I don't leave me. Listen, we're going to Colombia, Panama, and Venezuela. And we have they already picked the songs for a new album. When we come back, we got an album. I said, I don't care what you have. I'm not going. And Rafi Martinez, who's the original singer with Muralla and I said, Rafi, you can do this because you're not married. You're single, go. And Rafi said, like he got scared or something. Then, no, I'm not going to do it. So I promised. So for 3 years, up in 73, I was away from. That's when we started Muralla and Cantonente, about 73. Yeah.
When did you start writing, though? Because you wrote for Cortijo.
Oh, yeah, no.
Before you came to Rochester.
Oh, yes. I wrote three tunes for one of the recordings with Cortijo. And
what inspired you to write, though?
Huh?
I never. What got you to write? Because he's a tremendous writer.
What happened was that they were looking for songs. They were gonna do the album. They gave me a couple of tunes that I was gonna sing and record. And I said, I don't know. All of a sudden, I said, I can write. I've never written a song. Okay, he said. What would be? You can write. You can just write like that. I can write. He says, what are you going to write? He says, I'm going to write a song called Cortijo in English.
And Cortijo in English.
Okay. He says, go ahead. And when I surprised him, that was the first tune that I wrote, Cortijo in English. Muralla played it. And he was like. And
what about Pancuco? When did you write that?
Oh, no, Pancuco, I wrote it in 1981. And I took that out of a cartoon character.
The Tommy Lee Vencia Orchestra, which was a big Puerto Rican salsa band.
Big.
And Frankie Ruiz, which was like a teen idol at the time. Sang it, and it was Johnny's composition, but I don't remember exactly when that was.
Yeah, that was in 81. I wasn't living in Puerto Rico then because I left Rochester and I went back and then came back in 85. I was singing with Paquito Guzman at the time. And I was watching cartoons with my kids, and I saw a circus, a guy with a whip and a lion, and I sat on the thing, and I drove by Cuco. It's about a lion tamer that forgot that he was taming a lion and looked to the other side. And the lion got his arm, and in Spanish, Tuco, right?
Tuco, yeah.
In Spanish. That's
when you lose your arm.
When you lose your arm, they call you Tuco, okay? And the coro says, ya no le dicen pancuco, ahora le llaman el Tuco, because he had one arm, and... It means they don't call him Pancuco anymore.
Now they call him...
Yeah, Tuco.
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 Yeah, and they love that song.
It's a big song. It became a classic.
It was something, and I wrote that, and then I wrote another one for Fania All-Stars, for the Fania label. Ay Caray and
Popeye.
Oh, another song that I took out of the cartoons.
Listen... The only question I've asked this hour is, how are you doing? That's all I said to Johnny Vega. So, we're with Johnny Vega. If you're just joining us, Johnny Vega is entering the Rochester Music Hall of Fame, and he is one of the great raconteurs. He's a legend in the salsa world, a legend in our local music scene, and we're glad to have Johnny here. But, Johnny, I have to tell you, I've got to get our only break in, so we're going to come right back with Johnny Vega, Hector Argonzoni, Dresden Engel is here from the Rochester Music Hall of Fame, which is inducting Johnny, coming up here, and you can still see that performance that's coming up next month. Let's go to break. We'll come right back, and let's get a little Johnny Vega, a little spice going in and out here, and we'll come back and talk about your music. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, on the 58th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., the Rochester Labor Council will screen a documentary of his final days when he was standing in solidarity at the strike of Memphis sanitation workers. That conversation followed by a conversation with our friends from City Magazine on their monthly issue. That's Thursday. Oh, you're listening. I think that's Homenaje a Celia, yeah?
Celia, yes.
And Avisale took us into break there. When we were going to break with Johnny Vega, Johnny and Hector were saying that we were listening to Avisale. So that's one of the biggest, Hector, in Colombia?
In Colombia, that is the biggest song. They recognize that song, and they know every single lyric to the song.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny was just there last April, where he was recognized as a living legend of salsa. And he was one of the invited living legends of salsa. And he sang to a stadium of about 20,000 to 25,000 people. And when they started playing Avisale, everybody started singing with Johnny.
They knew the song. They knew the song.
Is that still special for you?
Oh, my God. Yeah, but they made me cry. They do. I'm a very emotional guy. And this guy is about 40-something years old, comes to me and says, Maestro, you know, I started listening to your music when I was 13 years old. But I never thought that it would come a day. And he started crying. When I could see you in front of me and I can hug you personally. And he made me cry too. I said, you know, but these are happy tears. You know, I'm so
great.
I'm so glad that I'm here for you, you know. Now what I want you to do is to enjoy it. You know, I'm glad that it, I think I had an album and I gave to him. I had a.
That's great. That's great. I mean, that kind of story is exactly Dresden Engel. When we talk about why Johnny Vega's going into the Rochester Music Hall of Fame, Johnny is known in Rochester. He is a big deal in many places, in places like Columbia, where, you know, you get people moved to tears when they meet Johnny Vega. So he's a perfect fit for the Hall of Fame here.
Right. Thank you. Garth Fagan's another good example, right? Until the Tony Award with Lion King, did folks go, oh, wait a minute, the rest of the country knows about our Garth Fagan?
Yeah. Yeah.
So for folks in Rochester who have been Johnny Vega fans, they might know how big he is in other countries, but it's really exciting to let the masses be reminded, yes, he's our gem, he's here, but we got to share him with the world too.
And he's going to perform coming up here. Drez, he's performing, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Three songs with his 12-piece band.
And the show is when?
It is Sunday, May 5th at the Eastman Theater.
Okay, that's coming up here. Tickets are still available as Johnny gets inducted to the 2024 class here. Let me take a couple of calls. Annette in Rochester. I know who this is. Hello, Annette.
Buenvenidos. Hello, everyone at WXXI. I had to call. Johnny, you have paved the way for our future generations of musicians. Muchas gracias, maestro. And thank you all for acknowledging what we here in Rochester, the second largest community of Latinos in New York State, know already, that we have a living legend in our city that highlights and celebrates and uplifts the creative economy as an international destination go-to city of the arts. Muchas gracias, pa adelante. Can't wait to be at the Eastman dancing in the aisles to your music.
Thank you, Annette. Johnny?
Thank you. Thank you for those beautiful, wonderful words. I can't wait. I can't wait to meet you.
Hector,
God bless you.
Hector, you want to add to that?
It's going to be a great night. Annette Ramos and the community know exactly what we have in Rochester. I personally, when I saw the reception that they got in Columbia, I finally realized. I knew that they knew of him, but I finally realized the depth. I had gotten an email from a young man about 28 years old from Colombia inquiring about, is this La Muralla, the Avísale La Muralla? And I was like, yeah. and that's when we started our connection and finding out more and more that not only in Colombia but in Peru, which salsa is very big in Venezuela, they knew of Johnny Vega and La Muralla, the band itself. And, you know, they were under Tico Records, which was a label under Fania. And I don't know, they got the music down there, but we never knew about it up here.
Great stories here. Let me grab a phone call. Thank you, Annette, as always. John in Rochester. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hello, Johnny, Hector. How y'all doing? It's John Rodriguez calling.
Hey, John. Hey,
Johnny, te felicito. I'm so proud of you in this recognition. For the Music Hall of Fame, I wanted to ask you and Hector if you could talk a little bit about La Muralla and your history, because, you know, I remember when I first came here as a young college student, the bands and you, not only did you attract us to be getting together and celebrating in fiestas, but you always were committed to community fundraisers. I remember Johnny and others in La Muralla always supporting the local nonprofits, local people trying to do good things in the community. You know, before there was radio station access, there were you guys bringing people together. And, you know, you still do it to this day. You guys still give so much. And maybe you could share a few stories if you guys remember some of the things. But and Hector, of course, he's always giving back. But just that this music is the music that brings us together and is healing, but is also helped to grow our community and mobilize us. And that, maybe you can share some stories with the exercise public about that.
Yeah, thank you, John. Go ahead,
okay,
guys.
John. I don't know if you remember when I first got here in 1970, I didn't do any music. I started making music and doing things with music 3 years after that. One day, when I first came in here, there was a group playing, and it was so tight, and they didn't have any brass. You know, it was all strings, guitar, you know, and I talked to the guy, Mike Rosario, may he rest in peace. He was like my brother. He was my brother. And I said, Mike, you got a good rhythm. Why don't you add, brass to it? Because I came from New York, from Cortijo.
Used to the big band sound.
Yeah, big band. And he said, we don't have any, nobody plays here brass. He said, what do you mean nobody played? No. We don't have a trumpet player. We don't have anybody that can read music. And I said, is there a music school here? He says, yeah. He's got a good one here. Well, meet me. I think it was on a Monday or something. We go there, and we went to his school of music. And I went over there, and I talked to the guy. I said, can we help you? He says, yeah. You know, the guy was surprised. Said, I'm looking for two trumpets and a trombone. And the guy said, what are you talking about? He says, we want somebody that would love to learn Latin rhythm. I'm talking about congas and timbales and bongos and dancing, you know, dance music. And he said, I don't know if they'll be interested in that. So I said, so he took me to a room in the home. There must have been about at least 10 students. And I asked, I told them what I was doing. And two of them said, that sounds, you know, like a challenge, but it sounds interesting, you know. His name was Bruce Trojan. Okay, Bruce Trojan became the manager of Jess Tysik. That's how big Bruce Trojan got. And he was a young man. And then there was Bob Troiano also. And he raised his hand. And then Dale Kirkland. Dale Kirkland retired already after doing all Broadway shows. I think, I'm not sure, don't hold me to it, but I think he got to be Buddy Rich's orchestra leader. Mm. I think. I'm not, somebody told me, he said, you know that he's Buddy Rich Orchestra, the leader, Dale. Young kid, had a beautiful 1970 Nova Black. I love that. So you got a nice looking car. And I took him to Mike's house on Little Street. And I put him in the Saturn, the Braidman, and I started telling him with the mouth, you know, I started mimicking.
Mouthing horn piece.
Yeah, I said, you
parts.
Know, like I go like, that's La Yal de Chinomón.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And he wrote it, and he started running it, and then it says, and then I kept giving the clave, the rhythm with the clave, and they loved it, and the percussion, and they loved it. You know, they played La Muralla for a long time. And that's how I started with La Muralla.
Yeah.
We were 2 months rehearsing, and we get a wedding. I think it was a wedding or a birthday. First time we went on public, you know, and we started playing, and everybody gathered, you know, around in front of us. A lot of people listening to the band and reacting to it, to the rhythm, to the lyrics. Because I started writing songs. Every rehearsal, I have two new songs. And so you could build the repertory. And we get, one guy comes in, that's a hell of a band. My God, it looked like a murai, like a wall. Those two singers, Rafi Martinez and Johnny Vega, they built like a wall. And I said, nope, this is not a wall. This is Orquesta La Muralla. Like una muralla en...
The wall, the muralla means a wall, a yeah. Solid rock wall.
Yeah, but muralla is like what you, let's say you want to protect the country, you build a
so
muralla.
Almost like muralla. A fault.
So
a
I said, this is not like a wall, it could be a wall. And they said, that's how muralla, Orquesta La Muralla came out, it stayed like that. Orquesta La Muralla till dawn.
And you know what we're going to end with here? We're going to end with some, I think it's released today is Como
actually, it's going to be released on the 3rd of May.
Oh, two right days before the ceremony. Como me la pida. And we can, I think we can, we're going to hear it all the way out through here. So still making great music, guys. I
mean, thank
just,
you.
Just phenomenal.
Yeah,
stuff.
He's actually working on the next album for La Muralla as we speak.
Por supuesto.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's in, we're so grateful for this conversation.
Thank you.
We probably could have done this all day, it turns out.
Oh, yeah.
The first thing Johnny said was, I'm out of words. I don't know what to say. And then he was lying. it's been a wonderful conversation. And Johnny Vega is being inducted into the Rochester Music Hall of Fame. Get your tickets now, Dresden Engel, where?
Rochestermusic.org or Eastman Theater box office, May 5th.
May 5th. Have fun. Thank you so much. And I want to thank Hector. I really appreciate your stories, the work, the music. Thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure.
And I know you're looking forward to the event as well here.
Very much so.
This community is so lucky to have Hector, Johnny, and I hope today more Rochesterians know what Colombia knows, what all these wonderful places, what Peru knows. Now we know here. It's wonderful. Johnny, thank you very much. See you on May 5th. Thank you once again.
I loved it here. You gave me a chance to let out some steam here.
That's Johnny. Let's listen to Como Es La Vida as we break here. Thank you, everyone, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio. Sana.